Hello, beautiful people. Happy podcast day. If you're listening on Friday when the podcast airs, happy Friday. Happy weekend. Happy almost weekend. This is Nicole. How are you? Welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. And today I am packing up to head back to Omega. I am guest instructing there for John Gabriel, which is how I got involved in Omega in the first place last summer. I am coming back to do a guest lecture for his amazing retreat, The Gabriel Method, and I'm going to talk about, of course, what else? Freedom from chronic pain. And so if indeed you are a listener that also is attending The Gabriel Method retreat, I will see you Tuesday afternoon. But in the meantime, I wanted to have a podcast all set for next week, and so I had this amazing interview with Barb Mastriani, who is a TMS warrior, beyond. I first met Barb when I had a live talk in Chicago about 2 years ago, and it was my first inkling that I wanted to start, you know, being live and carrying this message kind of in a workshop slash retreat format. And so I said, I'm going to start with Chicago because Dr. John Strax is in Chicago, who I am a big fan of his. He is a big fan of mine, and we work together a lot. And so I figured that might be a good place. I have several clients in Chicago. And so I decided that I was going to do a talk in Chicago. And so I was looking at the registrants, and I looked and somebody was there, and I'm like, what does it say? What does it mean she's from New Jersey? And I realized that Barb flew to Chicago for a 2 hour. Was it all day? I don't even remember. It was not all day. I think it was like, you know, maybe one afternoon, a several hour talk. It was amazing. It was incredibly humbling, and it made me feel really special that somebody had traveled from the East Coast, where I actually live, in order to see me, because that was my only planned live event at the time. And anyway, so that feels like a million years ago, but Barb flew to Chicago to see me speak, and that's where we met in person, and she explained to me at the time how she had been completely on disability and bedridden with her hip and back and leg and sciatic pain. And she was like up and walking and athletic. She looks like an athlete. And I couldn't believe it. I couldn't even picture her in such dire straits. And so I contacted her and I asked if she would like to talk to me today on the podcast. And she graciously agreed. So that's all the good news. The bad news is we had seriously annoying technical issues throughout. And one of the things that happened is because there was poor internet, my side of the interview for the first like three quarters of it was poorly recorded. And so it wasn't possible to keep that recording. So what I've done is because Barb's story is too amazing to miss, I'm using her side of the recording to tell her story. And then about three quarters of the way into it, you'll see that I jump in and I become conversational with her because I think the end, we've salvaged it. So anyway, I want to share with you, you know, no matter the technical issues, it's almost like metaphorical. You know, here we are just trying to be regular human beings, just trying to get by and to live happy, beautiful, free lives. And chronic pain gets in the way. Why? Because there's a technical issue between our brain and nervous system and our body not understanding that these repressed emotions are not going to kill us, and we do not need all of these myriad chronic pain and conditions and symptoms and illnesses in order to divert us and to keep us from feeling these feelings that our brain and nervous system deem such great predators that we're unable to feel them. And even though that sounds outlandish, it is the capital T truth, because once people all over the world, thousands and thousands of people that my work has touched, millions if you count Dr. Sarno's work, once these people begin to feel their repressed emotions safely and with my guidance, the pain goes away. And as you've heard many times over on this podcast, it doesn't come back. The only thing that comes back is normal human pain, which everybody has. So Barb and I are going to talk, sort of. For the first part, you're mostly going to hear her, but her story is well worth it. You don't need me chiming in every 5 seconds, truthfully. And it's really awesome. It's just an awesome story. And just to let you know, because there's no way to put a picture in audio form, her MRI, or I guess maybe it's an x-ray of her hip, is as scary, if not scarier, than my spondylolisthesis x-ray. Whatever physical structural abnormalities that Dr. Sarna would call normal abnormalities, just, you know, we all look different on the inside, just like we all look different on the outside, they never accounted for her pain. So when she looked at that x-ray, it made her and made doctors say she would never live a normal life. She would never walk properly. That had nothing to do with her pain. And when she did the emotional work, she lives a life of complete freedom. No chronic pain at all. Just regular human pain once in a while, bumps and bruises like we all have. So her story is awesome. I look forward to sharing it with you. A couple of just procedural notes. If you are appreciating this podcast, I would so appreciate if you jump over to iTunes and rate and review it. Write me a few lines and tell me what the podcast means to you. Really, really speaks to my heart. And if you need to look more into my work, if you would like to learn more about my work, just go to thecureforchronicpain.com. Sign up on the homepage. The first lesson of my course is free. And look at the resources page for links to all of my other material. Okay, so that's enough out of me. And I give you Barb's story.
Okay, great. And first, I want to say thank you so much for inviting me to your podcast. You know that I follow you and love you and had to come to Chicago to hug you. That was my goal, to thank you for all you do for me and everyone. It's just a blessing. So thank you, first of all. I'm happy to share my story because I want to shout it from the rooftops, as I knew I would when I first started to believe in TMS. And so this is one way to be able to do that. So my story, and as you learn about TMS, your story evolves because it grows bigger and bigger into other, you know, many years before, right? But the way you get to learn about TMS, I think, in the people that listen, you know, they're sort of in that desperation time. Well, everyone's at a different place, but I know that you find TMS usually when you're desperate. So I'm going to tell you my desperate story, and then I'm sure we'll weave into many other aspects in my life that have changed because of finding TMS in that desperation. So it was now, oh my gosh, 2.5 years ago that I say everything started with this horrible car accident that I had, because it really did. Like if I like put boundaries around it, I had a horrible car accident. I was hit from behind. And I didn't even really have pain from that, but it was a really bad accident where my car was totaled. It was just smashed from the front and the back. I happened to be, you know, thankful that I was driving a Volvo, so it was already protected. But I had a really, you know, slammed from the back by a truck. So I didn't necessarily just wake up in pain from that, but it started, it seemed to like start this whole episode of about a month later, I was taking a very long walk. We were in the California Redwoods on vacation and took a very long walk. And it was the first time where my back just hurt so bad. Like I had to stop, and I had never had anything like that. And so I have to interject here, if people don't, you know, a lot of people don't know me. So I have to interject too, that I was born with hip dysplasia in one of my hips. And so one of my legs is longer than the other by, I don't know, like an inch or so. And so I lived with that my whole life, but I never had limitations. My parents were very good about it. They never limited me. They never told me it would stop me in anything. So I never really thought about it. It plays into my story later, because a lot of it came up later about how much I was made fun of. But at the time, and then at this time now, I'll go back to walking in the Redwoods, two things came to my mind. One being, oh my God, my one leg being longer than the other is affecting me now, my back. Oh my God. And then the other revelation at the time was, oh, maybe it was that car accident. Maybe something happened to my back. And so, you know, at that time, you pop a lot of Advil and you continue to walk, you know, but now you start to get concerned about it. And then about a month later, my husband is a runner. So he was running in a marathon in in Florida. And so I decided to walk in the marathon because I never really I never stopped myself from doing things before. So I walked in that marathon, and that one was even worse than the redwoods because I just was like I was crying. My back hurt so bad. So that was like the next thing. And then same thing, popped Advil, whatever. So then a month later, I'm skiing, right? And now I'm not being able to ski because my back hurts. And now it's going where my back hurts, but my butt hurts. And then it's also going down my leg as I'm skiing. So I had to stop skiing. And then that's when I said, yeah, I really better go to the doctor for this. And so that started the whole like downward spiral into horrible, horrible pain. So from that February to that, say, September, October, everything just went downhill where the pain got worse. My fear got worse. I went to 3 different orthopedists. I went to acupuncture. I went to chiropractors. I remember walking into the chiropractor, you know, as, you know, like another thing that I just wanted to try. And I was in so much pain and this doctor could see it on my face and I'm like crying. And I'm just like, I wanted to just like hold on to him and say, please help me. Like, that's how much it hurt, like so bad. And so I was just looking for anything. And so back to the doctors, they were, and the reason I went to 3 was one, you know, I started with one who wasn't a specialist in like your back. So he sent me to, he did the MRI and x-ray, looked at my, like my whole history, meaning my leg being, you know, the hip having so much problems, plus my back having, now I'm diagnosed with spondylolisthesis. Because of the leg length discrepancy, they were saying that I had spondylolisthesis because of that, like one, you know, vertebrae was over the other. So he sent me to a back specialist. So then that doctor starts on me and he's looking at me with these like dire things, not so much telling me I needed surgery, but telling me I would never get better basically because I had all these structural things and that, you know, I need to go have those steroid shots. And he started on them and they were doing nothing for me. So I'm like getting more and more desperate because even doctors aren't being able to help. That's when I went to acupuncture. That's when I went to, you know, the chiropractor and nothing is like helping. Like I didn't, you know, some people go and then they start to get a little bit of relief. Like I was just getting worse, just worse and worse and worse. And I was doing everything I could possibly think of. And then that led to me being on disability because I just couldn't even work anymore. I just was, now I was working by laying on my living room floor with my laptop on my belly and my fingers on the keys. And that was just nuts, like crazy. Like I just knew it, right? It just was, I'm trying to sort of summarize it. So it's not too long of a story because so many people have the same story. But at that time I got to the most desperate of myself by saying to myself that if I can't live with this pain and if I have to live with it for like 1 year from now, if it's the same or worse, like I can't live. Like I'm done. So that's, very small summarized, the way it spiraled down. And I now, you know, looking back, so much of it was fear, a fear of the future, fear of the pain, you know, but now looking back and thinking about that time, it was the pain, but then the fear of the pain and the fear of the way my life was ending was what was like causing so much anxiety. Cause now I had not only fear, now I had not only pain, but my anxiety was through the roof and I was chewing Xanax. Like and by the way, my general practitioner couldn't really do anything for me. And I was going to her in this desperation too. And I walked into her, you know, with the tears, the same way I walked into every other doctor. And she just sat there and wrote prescriptions. It was sleeping pills. It was Xanax. It was anti-inflammatory and a painkiller. And that's all she did for me was I walked away with 4 prescriptions. And, you know, looking back and, you know, I'm thinking, oh, well, this is fine because this is what I need. But looking back, it's like, oh my God, like, I can't believe, you know, and as we say, like, of course, there's a place for doctors in our lives. By the way, I'm going to get to my story where a doctor, Dr. Guatz, was like a savior for me. He was a medical doctor, but these medical doctors that I was seeing at this time, you know, were just writing scripts, doing tests, and giving me absolutely no hope for the future. I still go to my general practitioner. I mean, she knows my story at this point. You know, because I see her for, you know, some other things, but she she was willing to listen as in the 10 minutes that you're given, right, in our world. But, you know, I told her after the fact, I was very blunt with her what I did to help myself, and she sees me. And, you know, that's my another way of just kind of sharing and getting maybe in the back of her head, another patient would walk in and maybe she'll think twice, you know, about what to send them for. So I, as I'm laying there on the floor, I'm also searching YouTube or anything I can possibly, you know, find to help myself. Because I knew that I had to help myself, since no doctor or chiropractor or even acupuncture at that time could help, right? So I was like, there's got to be something. And I don't remember exactly what I found. It could have been like your YouTube video, but I don't know exactly what led me to think or led me to say that, oh, wait a minute, Dr. Sarno, wait a minute, I heard of him, you know, and I just started to make a connection in my head. And what it was that I remembered was that about, I don't remember exactly, 15, 20 years ago, I'm a Howard Stern fan. And 15 years before, I heard from on Howard Stern, him talk about how he had back pain and was laying on the floor, and how he was healed by this guy, Dr. Sarno. And at the time, my husband, he was my ex-husband now, but my husband had back pain. So I bought him Healing Back Pain, the book by Dr. Sarno. And he just happened to never be open to it. And I never even read it at the time. I was just like, here's another thing. Like, why don't you try this? Howard Stern believes in it. I'm just trying to help him. And he wasn't open to it and didn't read it. But I happened to keep the book because I'm just like the type of person that, like, I'm not going to throw a perfectly good book out, right? I just kept it in my library. And so, you know, never even cracked open. So I kept it. And so as I'm on the floor and something on YouTube triggered my mind to say that guy, Dr. Sarno has something about back pain, I went up to my attic and I remember the day I had it in a white box of like all these books that I, you know, had moved from house to house, and I found it. And so I just started reading it. And, you know, there's a lot of, you listen to, you know, a lot of people's stories, and sometimes some people say, oh, I was cured right away, or, oh, this was it. And I honestly didn't have that. I read it thinking like, oh, well, maybe this could be me. You know, I was very skeptical. I didn't quite, you know, I certainly didn't have some sort of book cure. And I was still skeptical about it. I didn't see myself on the pages. I just thought maybe. And so, but I had all this time on my hands, right? So I started to watch more and more YouTube and more about Dr. Sarno. And it led me to you, Nicole. And I watched all of your YouTube videos. And, you know, this is going back a couple of years, so you didn't even have the podcast yet, but you had this, right? But you did have the program. And I remember it had just come out. Your, what do you call it? Do you call it your program? Your online course. That's it. So you had your online course, and I took that. And this is even before, to be honest with you, it was even before like Curable and all these other things you hear about, but your course was there. And it was brand new because I had to even work with your tech person to get the videos like to work on my computer. I remember that. Yep. So I took your program, and it was just the thing that made me say, it really was the thing, like when people say they see themselves on the pages of the book. Well, for me, it was your program that said to me, oh no, this is definitely more than just maybe. This is like hitting on something. And then your Facebook group was available really early on then too. And so I started to, you know, connect with people on the Facebook, and it just slowly over time, I started to just see improvement, even in the course I took, right? I did it, you know, like I did it like one of those really good TMS patients where I wanted to do like two a day. And so I did, you know, and I sort of obsessed on it and did it, and I did it twice. And I was posting like how much better I was getting, which was minute. It was tiny, but it was better. So your program made a big, big difference in my life. And I always tell people when I go onto your Facebook page that yes, buy the course when they ask if they should. But, you know, Mickey was your patient, and she was on there. And, you know, for me, the connection was she was sort of my age, you know, she was close to my age. I saw her speaking, you know, to you or in the interview. And then she had the same kind of symptoms I had. So it was like I just found that one thing that I could connect to. And then it gave me hope because she had a very similar story to mine. So it gave me hope. So there was, you know, I was kind of all over the place. I'm still trying to go back to the chronological order, but, you know, I definitely, you know, all, through all this time, I read all of Sarno's books. You know, I read Steve Ozanich. I was, you know, doing your program, staying on your Facebook group. I joined other Facebook groups. I did have a couple sessions with Steve Ozanich. And so the episode that I was having, which was the back pain and sciatica, really started to diminish, but it certainly wasn't in a minute. Like, let's just say I read the book in September. I would say that by the following April, I was so significantly better that I knew that this was it. You know, this was just so, you know, this was it. Like, that's what convinced me. But it took, you know, it took that much time for me to like completely believe. That time, journal speak was twice a day. You know, I was trying to follow the rules. Like I just said, I was trying to be the, you know, I laugh now because I really was. I was trying to do at the time. And I actually want to say that because there's something about that that isn't, that I think people should learn if they're listening. Don't get obsessed with it, right? But I was like, oh, maybe if I do it all day, my pain will be gone tomorrow. You know, and so there was almost that obsession with, but I was journal speaking twice a day. With, you know, following sort of like your recommendation and then meditating. And so, you know, but I was doing everything. Like I was doing that plus the program, plus every book I could get my hand on, plus obsessive, you know, thinking all the time, this is all I should do. So I would say that, you know, all of that played a part in me getting better. But you do have to be careful because the obsession was still creating anxiety inside of myself. Because my destination was to be out of pain. And now that I can look back, and I think honestly coming to Chicago, I remember on the plane, I wrote this on your page, on your Facebook group. I wrote that, you know, I found TMS and my destination was going to be out of pain. But what I've now learned, and especially that day in Chicago, what I learned is that my destination is no longer be out of pain. My destination now is to have a full, rich life. That's, you know, that doesn't have fear in it anymore. That's just full of love. And that's like how I view this now.
That is so amazing that you brought that up, Barb, because so often people miss that part and then they forget to say it and I forget to ask. So thank you for bringing that up. It is so important what Barb is saying. What she's saying is, when you are desperate to be well, and when you're outcome driven, and when you're looking to be a certain thing and arrive at a certain place, your nervous system perceives that desire as fear. And when that desire is perceived as fear, it's logged into another thing that your body needs to protect you from, that it becomes an emotion that's rising. It is viewed as the nervous system in the brain as a very dangerous predator. And then, you know, What do you need to fix it? Well, you need a headache or a backache or, you know, a fibro flare up or whatever it is to like keep you small and safe. And if we can just understand that you're going to get there, you know, I mean, we're almost there to Barb's part of the story where she's going to, you know, tell the triumphant, you know, day to day. But the point of the matter is you will get there. You will feel that complete freedom, but it's not going to come from desperately needing to be out of pain. And, you know, sometimes I say the slower you go, the quicker you get there. Mm-hmm. So thanks for bringing that
important,
up.
It's so, you know, the other thing to say is it's hard. This is not easy. It's one thing to say, and for me too, like it's one thing for me to tell you this now, but it's not easy. It takes time. It takes into account like who you are. You know, like you have to find a way to calm yourself and to believe, you know, that you're going to get there. It's not the same for everyone. You know, like I have a particular personality and so does every single human being. So you have to find the way to calm yourself and to calm your nervous system and, you know, and then start to believe. And so one of the other points that helped me a lot that I'd like to say is I have to dial back a little bit. When I found Dr. Sarno, I was also going on the TMS Wiki, and I was very fortunate to find Dr. Guatz, who is a TMS physician and in New Jersey. And so I think in October, I went to Dr. Guatz, and he's very old school. He still has the same exact program, or the same way that Dr. Sarno did, which is he sees you at a visit for a couple hours, and he diagnoses you with TMS if you have TMS, but then he invites you to his lecture. And I think he actually uses like Dr. Sarno's same PowerPoint slides, and he has a lecture in his office, and you sit there and then you're with other people in the same position as you, you know, like I had to stand in the back and other people are standing or sitting or whatever they can in the pain they're in. And, but so I was fortunate to find him. And one of the recommendations he made to me was to write down my successes as I had them. And so tiny little by little, I was having tiny little by little successes, but they were building up. But I always tell this story to people I talk to about this, and that is that I was actually the opposite. I found the greatest success when my pain was getting better, a little bit better, somewhat better, but I had people call it a relapse now. I don't like that word, by the way, but I had a pain spike because I was all of a sudden under a lot of stress again. So I had this pain spike. However, because of my awareness and knowledge of TMS, what I realized was I'm having a spike when I'm having a stressful situation hit me. And that to me was proof, right? Because I connected the physical with the episode because I was beating myself up. I was, you know, telling myself I was a jerk. I was, you know, I wasn't happy with myself. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can connect the pain rising to the pressure I'm putting on myself. And that was my greatest proof. I had significant, it was like a leapfrog for me in how my pain started to go away once I had that episode.
Well, that's actually a really great point. You know, that, and people say this to me a lot. They say, I was doing so well, but then, you know, I got into a fight with my boyfriend and now I have a horrible headache and I'm scared it'll never go away. And I always say, yeah, but if you got into a fight with your boyfriend and you had an emotional situation and the pain got worse, then we know it's not structural, you know?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, you should, like, to me, maybe I was far enough along or knew so much or studied so much that I was like, this is great. You know, like I got all excited that I had pain. and like that alone, just think what that did to my nervous system. I got excited to have pain.
And you know, I know that you mentioned this earlier in the podcast, and I want to just reiterate it. Chronic pain is not an epidemic of pain. It's an epidemic of fear. And when things start making sense for you and things start falling into place and you're like, oh, I see. I had a stressful thing. I spiked my pain. I did my journal speak. I meditated. I operated with love and not fear. And it went from an 8 to a 1. Oh, I see. And that reduces the fear in itself. So it's a beautiful thing. So when you are in this situation and you start seeing these positives, these successes, and I love what Dr. Guatz had you do, which is write down the successes. Because what I often say to people is when you start to get better, it's very important that you believe it. Because what happens is people will start to get better and they'll sort of write it off as happenstance. And I'm like, no, no, no. If you usually get back pain the second you wake up and you have walked to the bathroom and for that 10 seconds you haven't felt your pain yet, you have to acknowledge that. So was that the kind of things you started doing?
Yes. Dr. Guatz was having me mark those successes. And just to, you know, expand on that, what he said was, I don't care if it's 1 second that you were pain-free. I want to see it on your list. Because what I was doing was at that time I was actually going back to Dr. Guatz almost every week, and this was yet again my desperation because the time I was in desperate pain, and he's about a 45-minute drive from me, and I just remember those car rides where I was getting in the car and I could only sit on one hip, and I was trying to press the gas with like my other leg, and it was absolutely ridiculous, but I was going to him. But anyway, on this topic, he was telling me that even if it's a second or 5 seconds that there's a shift, or even if my pain, you know, goes from an 8 to a 6 for 5 seconds, he wanted to see it. And this was like back when, you know, it was the desperate time. He wanted to see it on my list. And so that's the kind of list I was making, you know, just to get these tiny successes.
So tell me, Barb, as you started noting these successes and as they started getting more and more common and more part of your experience, how did it change your life? Like, how did you, I kind of want people to start thinking for themselves how it's best to get back into life after, I would say, a significant trauma. Pain like this is a trauma. So how would it feel? How did it feel to sort of like get back into your life? And what did that look like?
Well, first of all, just like I'm trying to say about my own recovery, right? It was little tiny bits and pieces that just built upon each other over time. So getting back to life for me, one of the main things is I wanted to work again so badly. Like I just, you know, it's something I enjoy doing. I've never really been out of work. I love what I do. And I manage people, so I missed my people. So the way it looked over time to get back to life meant I started to work part-time even though I was in terrible pain. But what I realized, you know, I was scared to death of going back to work because I felt like I was going to go back to the way it used to be, which was at work, barely being able to sit, barely being able to concentrate, being in horrible pain. And I was so afraid of failing again, like going back to work and having the pain be so bad I'd have to go out again. And I actually was seeing a therapist at the time, a TMS therapist, and she worked with me with, she said, so what? Like, so what? You'll have to go out again. You know, people that are sick or just take some other diagnosis, you know, maybe you'll have to go back again, but so what? You know, that all that what I realize is trying to remove the fear and giving yourself an out. So that was big for me. I needed to let myself be okay with, okay, if I can't handle it, I'll have to go back out again, but that's okay. So I went back to work and, you know, little by little, day by day, and I, you know, very accommodating at work. I count my blessings all the time. My boss just wanted me back, so he was willing that for me to come back part-time. But in those 4 hours, I realized that there were moments, yet again, that I could actually concentrate on work. And the pain was still there, but, you know, I could concentrate on work again a little bit. And day by day, with still the out in my mind, it got better and better till 2 months of doing that, I was able to go back full time. And I was scared of that. But I also knew that, okay, it's okay, I'll go back out or I'll go back to part time. You know, now I could do that. So I know that maybe that sounds like a luxury, you know, that not everyone has in life. But, you know, somehow find, you know, I'm just giving advice now, like somehow find a way to have that in your life, like just giving yourself the out, slowly getting back into life. And I'm just talking about work here, but what's, you know, I haven't really shared much about my personal life, but really important to me too, was to get back to the gym. I've worked out my whole life and it's an important part of my life. It makes me feel good. It's part of my emotional health, I think too. So getting back to the gym and being okay with not the same kind of workouts I had before that were intense, right? Going back and just easing back in and letting that be okay. So little bits and pieces of that. But I do yoga. There's like a saying I can maybe would connect with someone here now. There's a girl I follow on yoga and I do a lot of her yoga routines on YouTube. And she has this saying that you have mini miracles on the mat. Related to yoga, right? You can maybe stretch a little bit further or do a little bit more. And so I applied that to TMS, right? Or my recovery. It was like, I'm having little tiny miracles that I might not even see, but I'm having little tiny miracles day by day. And really for me, I could see them when I look back. I could see them when I look back a year. I could see them when I look back a month. I could see them when I look back a few weeks. So I would do that. And then I would, you know, sort of be believing because I had successes and I had all these successes that I could look back on and know that I had mini miracles every day.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot of things you just said are super important. The mini miracles is like the most important thing because you have to start the same way you believed it every time you had a twinge of pain and you ran to the doctor. You have to believe the mini miracles and you have to let that be the trajectory of your journey. So that is super important. But another thing, Barb, that I'm hearing that I really want people to get, if I had to give this interview a title, I would probably say understanding the role of fear in recovery. Because what I'm hearing you say is every step of the way, you found a way to speak to fear. Because when you were terrified to go back to work and you said to your therapist, you know, but what if, and when she said, so what? I love so what? So what? You know, so, and I know that people out there will be like, I'll tell you, so what? So what? It's embarrassing. Or so what? I'm ashamed. Or so what? It's horrible pain. Right. But what I tell people is you have no other choice. It's either sit where you're sitting now or do the work and then embrace the so what. And when people do that and they start to live it, that's when the fear goes down. So that's what I'm hearing a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. You know, and just on the work note and related back to your work and why it means so much to me, I actually don't have a practice anymore where I do 20 minutes morning and night because journal speak is just integrated into my day. And I have had times, I'm looking at my notebook on my desk right now. I have had times where something I need to journal speak. Like, let's just, I mean, I have many examples, but I have to journal speak and I know I have to right then, right? I go to the back of my notebook where I make my notes for work. I go to the back of my notebook and I journal speak for 10 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever it takes, right, to get it out. And that's, I'm sort of jumping to the end of the story almost, but that's how I journal speak now. It's whenever and wherever I have to and need to, I do it. And then, you know, I rip that page out of my book, I tear it up, I pass the garbage and I pitch it in. And that's how my journal speak practice, what that's turned into is just when I need it and how long I need it. It's no longer sort of like every morning put aside 20 minutes and every night it's whenever I need it. Like that's what it's become for me. And I do need it sometimes. I do need it many times. I would say, you know, 3 out of 5 days at work, I journal speak, but when I need it and how, for how long I need it. And then I just tear it up, goes in little pieces and it goes right in the garbage can.
I love that. And I will tell, people ask me a lot the question, okay, so I'm at the beginning of this journey and I don't want to journal speak, but I get it that I need to. Is this going to be the rest of my life? And what I explain to them is pretty much exactly what you're saying, which is I'm going to teach you how to speak a different language, okay? I'm going to teach you like you're learning Spanish or French or whatever. And once you learn it, you know, so obviously what Barb is describing is not going to work at the beginning, but once you learn it, then it's your second language and you can pull it out and use it whenever you need to. Some people like journal speak out loud in the car on the way to work, you know, slowly and mindfully going through what they're fearful of or angry about or, you know, or sad about. Some people do what Barb is explaining, but it's just, then it becomes just part of your life. And it's actually, I think, quite joyful because you know you have a place to put all of those emotions and to vent them instead of letting them get toxic mm-hmm. in your body.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is for me. And really, just like anything, I've practiced it for so long and I've found a way that it works for me that it comes natural now. I don't even hesitate to think that I need that 5 minutes. I know exactly the times I need them. I know exactly the way my body feels when I need them. And I take that 5 minutes and just do it. And then breathing is actually a big part of it for me too, because instead of having the luxury of meditating after I journal speak at work, if it's work that I'm at or anywhere, I breathe and that helps me calm down and, you know, I got it out. Now I calm myself with breathing. And then I go back to my day and I believe that it's why I no longer have any pain. And it's not just, you know, I could talk for so many hours because it isn't just pain. I mean, I tell the story now, my next thing was really big, which is I used to be terribly allergic to cats, like horribly allergic to cats. And I don't know how much time we have left, so I'll just tell it really quickly, but because of, I understand the mind-body connection now, and because I apply it to so many other areas of my life, my mother-in-law was dying and she happens to have a cat and I wasn't able to spend a lot of time in her home, prior to, her having her diagnosis because of her cat. I used to have to sit outside sometimes or just not meet at her house. We'd have to go somewhere else. And because she had a terminal illness and was going to be housebound, I just decided that I can't be allergic to this cat. And so I journal, you know, as you say, so we had an hour drive home from her house one day when I had a sneezing fit and my eyes are tearing. And I just decided to think, and I guess, you know, sort of journal speak, think, about why I was allergic to cats. And I realized, you know, I went back to, you know, this was an hour long, but I'll summarize it. I went back to my childhood. I went back to the reaction I used to have to animals, and it was I couldn't breathe. And I used to have to put my head into the freezer to make me feel better about breathing. And my parents, they never took me to the doctor. And I would be like, I have asthma and I'm going to die and I can't breathe. And they're like, no, no, you're fine. You're not going to die. They weren't being mean. In my child eyes, they were being mean. But I just believe my parents, they just, you know, they're human, but they believed in toughening up, or that unless you were like bleeding or had a broken bone, you didn't go to the doctor. So I hated them for that. And so I journal speak, you know, in my head on the ride home about how angry I was at them. And I'm going to tell you, it was the most revealing to me about the mind-body connection, because I promise you, and I know this is hard to believe, but the next time we went to my mother-in-law's house, I was not allergic to her cat. And she has since passed away a few months ago, but I was never allergic to her cat again. And you know, believe it or not, sometimes I say it like this because sometimes I can't even believe this has happened. But it did. And I just feel full of love and compassion, like for myself when I tell that story, because it just is so real to me now.
Let me just tell you that I just got chills all over my body when you said, and I was never allergic to cats again. And it's only going to hit, you know, a small percentage of people out there who have really been doing this work for a long time, or have been following Dr. Sarno for a long time, or are pain-free for a long time. So they're not in the fear of it. That shit is so straight up true. I have seen miraculous things like that happen to people all the time. And what it says to me is this. Our brains are so much more complicated and our systems are so much more fascinating and mysterious than anybody can explain. You know, I know right now, even doctors at the Mayo Clinic at Harvard, at, you know, the best institutions in the world, they don't claim to understand more than a small percentage of the brain. And it's phenomenal how I don't know. It just blows my mind. I mean, things like that have happened to me when I used to sit on Dr. Sarno's alumni panel at NYU back in the early 2000s. There would be stories like that all the time. I remember there was one doctor that used to sit on the panel with me. His name escapes me, but he's still in the TMS circles. I know that I saw him at Michael Galinsky's All the Rage premiere in the city, but he had seasonal allergies when he was a child. So badly, it was like horribly debilitating for him. It defined his entire childhood, and he did this work and they went away. And, you know, it's crazy. So thank you for sharing that part of your story. And in the interest of time, why don't you just kind of, you had told us what it was like, you told us what happened. So just kind of give us the shiny rainbow of what it's like now.
So I want to say that, you know, I started this actually with the podcast, right? I want to shout it from the rooftops, and I do. But I hate giving like this like, oh, life is so wonderful and everything's perfect. And that isn't the case, right? Like my life is so turned around and better. I can say now that the best, you know, in my life right now, just finding TMS and finding this and the work and everything about it and continuing to learn it's just changed my life and it's wonderful. But I don't want to make it sound but I'm still human. I still have challenges in my life, but it's just the way I live my life and the way I approach my life and the way I approach things in my life that has changed significantly. And it's not over. Like I started to say, one of the other things I always say is the losing of the pain was initially my destination, but now I know there is no destination. It's like, now I know that I just found a new way to live. And so I live my life day by day, grateful, that I found this work, grateful that, you know, for everything in my life, grateful for continuing to learn and constantly and sharing what I do. But I also don't think that, you know, it doesn't mean that I won't feel a pain in the future. Like that isn't the point anymore. The point is that I get it, and more I see the connection, and more I'm going to grow into understanding and learning. And I know that, honestly, because I'm sympathizing with people that may be listening right now that are crying, you know, after listening to this, or crying in their own pain. Like, I want so badly to take my heart and give you hope, because I'm sitting in a chair right now. And I will tell you, it is still very real memory that when I sat down in a chair, the anxiety even comes back, because the pain I would feel was so real and so horrible. It would just bring tears to my eyes. But yet I'm sitting in this chair and there's no fear and there's no pain, and it just feels so good. Like, it just feels so good. And so, yeah, I know that every single person listening to this can have that. So I just hope that I can, you know, give that teeny tiny bit of hope to people, because it really is real. And I'm happy to, you know, to help anyone that I can. And I'm, you know, this is one way I can do it, but it's just so real. And you just take just be so patient with yourself. Because when you look back, whatever time frame that is for you, when you look back, you just won't believe how wonderful it is to not only be pain-free, but to understand all of this and how much it changes your life.
You know, I think that's a really great way to put it, because, you know, when I said give the shiny rainbow of what it's like now, to me, that is a shiny rainbow. That is it. This is all we get, guys. You know, people have this sort of erroneous notion that life is to be without suffering. It's just not true. You know, sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies. So of course, on any given day, when I'm super stressed out, I'll get a headache. But instead of being in a panic and giving that headache meaning and saying, oh, now I'm not going to be able to do X, Y, and Z, I go into my feelings. I'm gentle with myself. I'm kind. I decide what I might need to do differently that day, which is maybe I need to stop what I'm doing and take time to meditate and journal, or I need to take a rest. I need to be kind. And then it's gone. And sometimes it's gone within 10 minutes if I just think about it that way. And sometimes it's a shitty day and I have a shitty headache and I know I need to take some Advil and go to bed and I'll be fine the next day. But living a life without fear of pain is the definition, in my opinion, of being pain-free, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. The fear, like I said, and you know what, you want to label this fear. I actually, you know, that's it. It just really is. Once you understand that it's your fear of things coming, and you just instead use them, you know, people say use them as a message, or use them as a, you know, start your thought process. I know Louise Hay actually helped me a lot through my journey too. And I still love her. And she's so of the thought that your pain is a message, where it even is in your body is a message. And you can use that as the starting point for, all right, so why, you know, why does my shoulder hurt? You know, what am I carrying on my back today, making my upper back hurt? And then just thinking it through, like I said, and it does happen to me too, thinking that through sometimes is the thing that makes it go away.
Totally. Totally. Well, Barb, thank you so much for taking the time out today to talk to me, to inspire people. And it's been such a pleasure talking to you. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And I just, you know, I'm always doing this on your site, but I speak for many, I know, because I speak to them. But we all love you, Nicole. And I just want to be able to say that publicly.
Barb, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate that. And it's really nice to hear. And I do feel, as you know, incredibly passionate about this message and the fact that people are hearing it and the fact that people are getting better and the fact that a person like you, who was bedridden and on disability, is back at work, exercising, traveling the world. It does my heart really good. So thank you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I will see you next week. Until then, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs. That's me. Bye-bye.